Last but most definitely not least, we'll introduce Paul Nolan from the Community Relations Council. Paul, you're the author of the monitoring.
Yeah, I produce the annual Northern Ireland Peace Monitoring Report, which is a project funded by Joseph Rowntree, which he tried to take a kind of state of the nation approach to the Northern Ireland peace process each year. I've just counted this up, you know, I'm speaker number 20. my calculation is, you know, zero impact if this goes well. But to stop it going below that, I'm going to try and keep this short. Really just three observations on the theme of civil society, which isn't something I cover very much in the report, incidentally, but it's the title of this session. So let's talk about it. You mentioned Cathy Alex Atwood. You know, for those of you who don't know, Alex Atwood this week in the Assembly waved around some of these many submissions that have been made to HAS from civil society organisations, 500 in total, which is encouraging, you know, of the idea of a vibrant civil society, were it not for the fact that they're all on the subject of flags, parades and dealing with the past. But there was a debate, and he was feeding into that, on whether or not the Civic Forum should be reconstituted. And the Assembly voted by a small majority that they would revive the Civic Forum. I think they were forgetting, I mean, the attention span of the Assembly and the repetitious nature of the debates is such, they seem to have forgotten they debated this in June. And in that occasion, voted to reconstitute the Civic Forum by a very small majority. At least, yes, the majority has come from the Nationalist Party, Sinn Féin, and the SDLP or whoever unionists are against. The official position is this: OFM, DFM did a consultation exercise on the Civic Forum, which they haven't published. They did it in 2009. The reason why they haven't published it is because it's so hostile. And the problem with that is that actually they don't have any choice in it. The Civic Forum is written into the Good Friday Agreement. Mm-hmm. It's a reserve, not a devolved matter. So, you know, the Assembly cannot actually abolish it. On the other hand, it's very weak enthusiasm for reviving it. And I think it's partly, this is a generalisation, but, you know, the air has gone out of the balloon, really, on the idea of civil society worldwide. I mean, this was something that existed in a certain period after the fall of the Berlin Wall. But it did have a particular, you know, there was a particular manifestation of it here, which really ran from, I mean, I would get it back to Agenda 21, through the Opsahl Commission, through to the Good Friday Agreement, to the Yes campaign, and then to the establishment of the formal Civic Forum. And there was a narrative that came out of this which came from the voluntary and community sector, which was rather self-flattering about how important the voluntary and community sector had been in creating the peace in Northern Ireland, in, you know, experimenting with new democratic forums and giving a voice to the marginalised, etc. And there was a certain amount of hubris, and of course what followed was with the Civic Forum. There was a sort of pathetic end to that when the Civic Forum kind of trickled out in acrimonious debate. But it seems that it may actually now be given new structural and organisational form. But I wouldn't bet on it. I mean, for it to actually to be reconstituted, they'd have to return to that debate again. And this time when they realise it might mean something, they might vote differently. Okay, second point is that moving away from structural forms like the Civic Forum, we've seen, I think, civil society take different shapes following the Good Friday Agreement. And I think we've seen, you know, positive and negative. Let me deal with the negative first, with the emergence of sort of, you know, what you might call dark social capital, the dense ethnic bonds that have formed in the basis of the Good Friday Agreement. And, you know, in terms of the debate as it's been conceptualised today, the beginning of the culture wars, And, you know, when I think of that term, it does seem to me there is something odd about this term, something got up about this idea of culture wars, isn't there? I mean, you know, we're talking about ethnic conflict here, it goes back centuries, so the idea that we've just discovered it's a culture war, I mean, that's what it's been. But certainly there's a new articulation of this, and, you know, trying to trace this back, it's been voiced a lot in I think you were quoting from David Hume and Edward Stevenson and people from the Orange Order. I actually did it back to, and I think you can be precise about this, I did it back to a meeting that took place in the Park Avenue Hotel in East Belfast on the 25th of April in 1985. And that was a critical moment. The meeting had been convened by David Trimble. The reason why he convened the meeting was his sources within the British government were telling him what was coming down the line. And what was coming down the line was the Anglo-Irish Agreement. It wasn't yet called that, but what he was aware of was that the Irish government was going to have an increased say in the affairs of Northern Ireland. What's more, because there had been such concern about the radicalisation of the nationalist community in the north following the hunger strikes, the Irish government had insisted that there would have to be increased funding and increased governmental support for Irish culture, for the Irish language and all forms of Irish culture. And so David Trimble was aware that this was really going to be difficult, and that what was going to happen was that we were now going to take a cultural turn, as it were. And I'll quote this little bit from Henry MacDonald's biography of Trimble, where he says that references to respecting nationalist culture and identity would translate into money for the promotion of the Irish language, Gaelic games, music, dance, and so on. Culture would become, in Trimble's words, a new battlefield, and unionists would have to prepare for a counter-offensive. So the culture wars begin at this point. And this is a crucial turning point in unionism. That debate that had taken place in the 80s between civic unionism and ethnic unionism, this is the point where Trimble decided the road he was going to go. And after that, there was an attempt to float the unionist counter-offensive. Now, there was a problem. Nobody was clear what unionist culture was. They wanted to support it, but had to find out, first of all, what is it? And the minutes of those early meetings show they talked about things like Davy Crockett and the Titanic and all of these serious things. Ulster Scots didn't emerge, you know, for about a year into this process, but by this stage they were beginning to shape up the project. And the project that they shaped up was one where encouragement was given to ethnicising the conflict, and we're limited time here. But essentially, what we've seen, you know, in the past year is the outworking of that politicisation, that ethnicisation of the culture. And I think what we've also seen is something that's drawn alongside that is the passing of power from the political parties to the civil society organisations, to the not just the Orange Order, but after the FACTS protest, we've got all sorts of organisations. You know, the civil society is going to be defined as, you know, in between the individuals or the state. Well, my goodness, you know, all shades have emerged within Protestant culture over the course of the past year. And if you want to see, you know, if you want one indicator of the effect of all of this, you look at who is representing the DUP at the House talks. There's two people in there. One of them's from the DUP. The other, of course, is Mervyn Gibson. And this is the problem that unionism has got itself into by trying to kind of work with civil society or with, you know, Protestant culture organisations. They are now so in hot with them that they know they can't go in and negotiate and try and sell the deal to the middle. They have to actually have Mervyn Gibson at the table before this thing will work. Have I got a minute to say something more positive?
You do, absolutely. Please let me handle the positives.
I took note of that. Here's the problem you have when you go from negative to positive. All these binaries go from negative to positive, from unionist to nationalist, from Protestant to Catholic, and actually go from Belfast to Derry. And, you know, if we write up, as I will have to do, you know, what happened in 2013, it really is a tale of two cities. And here's the reality. The further you get out of Belfast, the better things look. This is true. I was up in Derry last week, and I talked to people from the Apprentice Boys and people who've been involved in city culture. And when they tell you these stories, it's like some kind of liberal's dream. You can't believe this was true. That actually, you know, the negotiations were done where the Apprentice Boys agreed to participate in the Flat Hill. And they actually came over, you know, the flute bands. So did the PSNI band. We're all playing the same thing. You know, they're all playing together in Derry this year in this city of culture thing. And I asked them about this because it was an interesting dynamic. I mean, the city of culture provided a great opportunity for Derry, but it also brought something into very sharp focus. When you put these two sentences, these two phrases together, Derry, UK. And of course, you go back a year, and the dissidents thought it was their opportunity. If you remember, pipe bombs the Office of City Culture. That doesn't happen anymore. And I asked them, the organisers, I mean, what happened there? I mean, how did this thing play out? I mean, how did this get turned around? And there were a number of pivot points. One of them was at the start of the year, and it was the discovery of the hyphen. And the hyphen is actually metaphorically performed the function of the peace bridge across the river. That the whole thing about, is it Derry or is it Londonderry? When it became Derry Londonderry, it turned a corner. That actually helped change things. The other thing that was hugely important was the flat. 200,000 people came to the flat. There has not been a single dissident attack on city culture since. Not physical, not verbal, not ideological, because the mass popularity of the FLA and the city culture actually neutralised that. Now, let me finish on this point, since it's a research event. I asked them up there, who's researching this? Because, you know, when Liverpool was European City of Culture, Liverpool University set up a whole research team, and they invested a lot in this. They did a very good report on it. And they said, well, you know, the City Council will help. Well, of course they will. You know, there'd be a lot of Derry boosterism in this, but actually nobody's researching this. And there is a problem here. And I mean, it's a problem that, you know, we're familiar with, certainly I'm familiar with, that researchers do tend to gravitate towards the bad news events. I mean, the processes of peace are so under-researched. I mean, I just went through the programme for today and just circled words like battleground, cultural, weapons, war. You know, this is what we like to talk about. But really, there's a big opportunity to discover the fact that some parts of the Northern Ireland peace process are actually working very well.